Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. And if you want to know a little bit more about who we are, you can go to turningtowards.life, our website, beautifully created by Justin. And you can also go to wearethirdspace.org and find out about the bigger picture of Third Space and where this all got born from, which is our community. And today we have a source by the wonderful Thomas More, who wrote this book called Care of the Soul, which Justin is part of our bookshelf, we call it, don't we, in our professional coaching program. And it's wonderful to bring sources from there that kind of create the background underpinning reference points in some way for the work that we do in teaching others to become coaches, integral development coaches. So thank you for choosing this source, Justin. And just so that everybody knows, you can get this episode and every other episode into your inboxes each week, because Justin's very technical and set up a thing where you can sign up to our weekly kind of newsletter, if you like. But all it contains is the episodes previous, and you can just have that in your inbox so you can click on it really easily. We're on all the different podcast platforms. And this source, this wonderful source, which Justin's called Care versus Cure, will be in the show notes of the podcast. It will be in that email and on our website as well, in case sometimes it's easier reading along as you're listening to us reading it as well. Especially maybe if your language is not a first language English, you could follow along and maybe understand it and integrate it a little bit more. So we invite you to sit back, relax, and receive this conversation. And thank you for being in community with us. Thank you for sharing this piece of your life with us on the podcast. And we are overjoyed to be able to share our lives with you as well. And Justin, thank you for being here. Thank you for choosing this wonderful source. We are on episode number 455, and that's quite a thing. We're coming up to, what's the year this year? Are we like nearly 9 years or something of doing this, Justin? Something like that. So it's quite remarkable that we're still here and somehow carrying on talking to one another. And I'm really looking forward to how this is going to emerge in us, and how I'm also know I feel every single time I leave here, which is refreshed and renewed and inspired and more alive than I was before. So thank you, Justin.
Thank you, Lizzie. It's wonderful to be here. Hello, everybody. Just to add to a couple of things you said, Lizzie, in the show notes and on our website, you can support this project, which lots of people do, and it really helps us keep this thing going. You can find out about our coaching programs, and also you can see all the information of our upcoming Turning Towards Life Live Season 3, which begins in September, which is a joining in-person on Zoom monthly community of learning, a monthly experience, which we're well into our second season now and is quite a wonder. And it's a way of bringing this conversation into your own life with real other people. It's warm and generous and moving and truthful and holding and full of learning. And you're really welcome to join us. And you can email us from our website too. So lots of ways if you go to turningtowards.life to engage beyond the podcast. And I think that's one of the things that's so exciting to me about this, Lizzie, is that this isn't clearly just a podcast. It's a podcast and conversation that's in the middle of a whole number of ways of engaging with learning and depth and relationship and discovery and community. And we'll come at this source the way that we always do. The practice here is that we'll bring Thomas More's source into the middle, and the source is like the third with us, Lizzie and Justin and the source, and then the relationships between all of those. And we stay open and unhurried, and we have no idea yet where the conversation is going to go. And we're very, very glad that you're all here with us. And as you said, Lizzie, it's wonderful to read the source. So if you want to pause this to find it in the show notes or on the website and read along with us, or read it first or read it after, you're very welcome to. And this is from the introduction to Thomas More's extraordinary book, Care of the Soul. It's called Care versus Cure. A major difference between care and cure is that cure implies the end of trouble, if you are cured, you don't have to worry about whatever was bothering you any longer. But care has a sense of ongoing attention. There is no end. Conflicts may never be fully resolved. Your character will never change radically, although it may go through some interesting transformations. Awareness can change, of course, but problems may persist and never go away. Our work in psychology would change remarkably if we thought about it as ongoing care rather than as the quest for a cure. We might take the time to watch and listen as gradually it reveals the deeper mysteries lying within daily turmoil. Problems and obstacles offer a chance for reflection that otherwise would be precluded by the swift routine of life. As we stop to consider what is happening to us and what we're made of, the soul ferments, to use an alchemical word. Change takes place, but not according to plan or as the result of intentional intervention. If you attend the soul closely enough, with an educated and steadfast imagination, changes take place without your being aware of them until they are all over and well in place. Care of the soul observes the paradox whereby a muscled, strong-willed pursuit of change can actually stand in the way of substantive transformation.
Thank you, Justin. So Thomas More says, a major difference between care and cure is that cure implies the end of trouble. If you are cured, you don't have to worry about what was bothering you any longer, but care has a sense of ongoing attention. There is no end. Conflicts may never be fully resolved. Your character will never change radically, although it may go through some interesting transformations. Awareness can change, of course, but problems may persist and never go away. Our work in psychology would change remarkably if we thought about it as ongoing care rather than the quest for a cure. We might take the time to watch and listen as gradually it reveals the deeper mysteries lying within daily turmoil. Problems and obstacles offer a chance for reflection that otherwise would be precluded by the swift routine of life. As we stop to consider what is happening to us and what we're made of, the soul ferments, to use an alchemical word. Change takes place, but not according to plan or as the result of intentional intervention. If you attend the soul closely enough with an educated and steadfast imagination, changes take place without your being aware of them until they're all over and well in place. Care of the soul observes the paradox whereby a muscled, strong-willed pursuit of change can actually stand in the way of substantive transformation.
There's something I love in reading Thomas More's book that he makes a big deal of, which is that we are, by being human, we're very mysterious, deep, poetic kind of beings. And we're not at all like machines or software or any of the things that we know how to go in and fix. You know, if your car breaks down, the right thing to do is to go to the garage, and they don't do something poetic with the car. They figure out where the problem is and they replace the part, and then the car works again. And it's really tempting to think that we're like that. You know, we sort of live in a technological surround that has us imagine that everything's technological. And Thomas More says, whoa, we're so not like that. We are for some things, but for the actual living of a life, we're really not. And so I'm feeling very appreciative of his way of saying a lot of the time when we run into something difficult or something that troubles us, instead of imagining that our job is to fix it or to make it go away, there's actually a much more interesting question that we can ask, which is what's the meaning in this? What is this showing me about me and my life? And how might it be possible to enter more deeply into this life that I'm in? So I think that's right. It feels right to me, and it's so much kinder than this, I've got to fix myself up kind of mode, or we have to fix one another up kind of mode. And he also makes the point somewhere else that much of what we're working with in our lives, there are many things that won't change. They won't, I mean, that's exactly where he begins here. There are things that will not go away. And part of our suffering is that we imagine that what we're meant to do is to get to a place where all of our difficulties go away, or all of our conflicts are resolved, or all of our confusions abate, or somehow we're meant to have figured it out, or fully grown up, or any of these things. And a lot of those things won't happen in the course of a single life. So then what to do? So starting with something much more mysterious and meaning-laden and poetic than machines are, that many things won't resolve themselves, is a wonderful entry into this distinction between care and cure. Because cure can be so... cure sounds excellent, and sometimes it's, you know, I'd really like to be cured of things that could be cured and all of that, of course. But cure can sometimes be the opposite of care. And we've talked quite a lot in our years of talking here, Lizzie, we've talked quite a lot, you and I, about this notion of there being, one way of talking about this, about there being many different parts of us, as well as some kind of deep, wide, sort of oceanic self that we are, and that very often parts of us are engaged in very important projects of protection, or, you know, they're up to something that has meaning in our lives that might have got born in our childhoods or in the generations that came before us, or it might just be a response to the complexity of the world as it is. And if we muscle this line where Thomas ends, that it's really a paradox that sometimes we so want something to change that we'll come in with a muscled, strong will pursuit of something. And in doing so, that in us which does not wish to be muscled over, that doesn't want to be destroyed or fought off or discounted or dismissed or dishonored or humiliated or undignified or whatever it is, that sort of strong-willed approach entails, that in us, either we end up having to try and cut parts of ourselves out, like with a scalpel. I'm cutting this meaningful part of myself out in order to, with the hope that I'll be cured, which is never going to work. Or there's something that we're muscling over responds anyway with a, hold on, I'm not here to be muscled. And so it, as Thomas says it, it can actually stand in the way of what we really long for. So what an amazing invitation it is to say, what would it be to care for that which we encounter in our lives? What would it be to come with observation and patience and attention and wonder and imagination, rather than get rid of, to everything, including that which most vexes us, which most confuses us, which most troubles us, to meet it with an attitude of care is so different to the way I think many of us end up relating to ourselves, and the way our wider culture tends to think about what's called for when we are tender or hurting or confused or in difficulty.
Oh my gosh, there's so much here. This line, problems and obstacles offer a chance for reflection that otherwise would be precluded by the swift routine of life. It's such a different story about what a problem might be. And to treat those things, you know, as we would call it in our work, Justin, as openings, as opportunities, as places to be curious inside of and to be in relationship about, to treat them that way is such a different story. As in, some obstacle comes upon us and we don't know what to do, and instead of trying to fix it or muscle our way through it or change it or something, that we go, I wonder what this is. And this is bringing up for me the ongoing everyday challenge of parenting, and knowing inside of me the longing just to take all the pain away just to make everything okay, and how that can translate into a kind of fixingness or a cureness. And I have to watch myself so carefully that I don't try and fix things all the time and make things better all the time, but that I do this as Thomas is inviting, which is taking the time to watch and listen and let something unfold and see what it's here for, and deepen into the mystery of what's unfolding, both in me and my family and my children and my friends and, you know, all of the things. So it's such a beautiful reminder. And I'm also really reminded of the difference between being curious to the unfolding and trying to fix something, in terms of what happens when someone brings a problem to me. So often people say to me, oh gosh, isn't your work a bit of a burden? Like people telling you all their stuff all the time. And this is so brilliant, because it's so clarifying for me, which is that what I'm noticing is that because I'm not seeing those things as obstacles and problems that need to be fixed, they don't seem like a burden to me about you if you're bringing me your problem. It seems like an opportunity that we have together, and that it's life-giving, not burdensome. When you come to me broken and lost and uncertain and like you need someone to dangle a stick into the river to grab onto because you feel like you just don't have any purchase on the banks anymore, I feel the goldenness of that. And that's not to belittle that you're feeling the way that you're feeling in any way at all, but it is to say, this is hopeful. There's a crack. We can work here. This has gold in it somewhere. And I feel like Thomas More knows that deeply and is standing for that and has written this and made it the sentences that he wanted to make in order for us to receive this beautiful message. That when we stop to consider what's happening to us, the soul ferments. And fermentation is expansion. Fermentation is something grows. Fermentation is something is created that wasn't there before. There's an alchemical reaction. And so the life-givingness of what happens when we come into one another's worlds where there are problems and issues and difficult things that, as he says, may persist and never go away, there is always a place for that to be held, not as a problem to be fixed, but as an opportunity to feel into the mystery of things. And so when I am like that with you, Justin, what's also implied is that there's nothing wrong with you. And so immediately it shifts the thing where you come thinking there's something terribly wrong because you're in this river and you can't get purchase on anything and you don't know what to do. Somehow in that moment when somebody treats you like you're not a problem to be fixed, but there's something happening here that's worthy of our attention and care, this ongoing care that Thomas is talking about, you then get to feel not like you're not the problem, but that you're an opportunity. And to narrate ourselves that way is a very different encounter as a human being. And so that's, like, I guess, the gift we can give one another in this, is to both take this on for ourselves, like when there's issues in my life, problems in my life, there are opportunities for deepening into the wonder and the mystery of what on earth is going on here, rather than thinking I need to fix and button things down and whatever. But also extending that to other people too, where I can be with you in a way where I don't say, right, okay, we've got to sort this out. This is terrible. What are we going to do? And implicit in that is that you get to feel, oh no, there's something wrong because she thinks there's something wrong. It's like trying to do something that, where I'm looking at you as an opportunity for deepening, and you get to feel like you're that opportunity rather than that problem that needs to be fixed. And if we related to each other that way, what kind of mysteries might emerge? I mean, we really don't know what's going on here in lots of ways. Why things come our way, why our circumstance, there's no answer to the question why. Seems to me anyway, I've never found the why of many things, but there is deep mystery and wonder and curiosity and deep learning and growth that can come from this inquiry into what's happening now and what's my journey and what's my part and what is there to learn about this, and what is there to learn about you, about us. So I'm really, really appreciating the clarity and the what Thomas More's taking a stand for here, feels very, very vital to human life, feeling like it's not a burden, feeling like it's not something to be fixed and something that's broken and something wrong with it, but that we can relate to it in life-giving ways that bring more aliveness and more curiosity and more a greater sense of wonder and mystery about who we are and how on earth this is all unfolding as it is.
There's somewhere, I think Thomas More says this, but I'm also really saying in response to everything you've been saying, this is something I know I feel very deeply, which is maybe what's so often missing in our lives and in our own approach to in our own lives and our own talking to one another is a kind of sense of reverence and awe in the face of what it is to be a human being. We want to charge in to fix things so that they'll be different. And the many things could and should be different. It would be better if they were. I'm not for a moment setting that aside, that improving the state of things is a very wonderful thing to be able to do. But when we come into things without reverence, when we treat the feeling of being in the middle of the river as if it was a terrible mistake or something had been wrong, something was terribly wrong, rather than going, gosh, I wonder what this is. And I wonder how this might be connected to the ancient and archetypical and repeating story of being a human. You know, each of us in the middle of our difficulties, we're also in a spot that many people over time in different cultures and different times will have been in some way. And so care and reverence and respect, in a way, a kind of respectful orientation towards what's here, rather than a trying to trample over it and change it for something else. And there are a couple of lovely stories in the opening of Thomas's book, one where he talks about a man who comes to him who's been doing a job that he really hates for about 10 years and says to Thomas, I'm in such despair, I've been doing this job and I've hated it and my heart's not in it. And Thomas says to him, well, you are actually in it, the whole of you is in this job. Wonder what it would be like to come out of the work with curiosity for a while, just before you know, and it turns out that partly what's been going on is this man's been inside the job and then also trying to not be in the job at the same time and not knowing how to do it. And he begins to include his own heart, rather than putting his heart outside the job, he begins to include his own heart a bit more inside the work and wonder about and sort of come out the experience of being in the work with curiosity and awe and wonder and respect. It doesn't mean it's all good, but those orientations allow the experience of his work to come forward. And then something begins to change. This alchemical kind of something, which you can't predict, begins to shift. It turns out that what he's in the middle of isn't exactly what he's taken it to be. And that, I think, is the thing I get from what you're saying, is that when we come towards it knowing that what we think we know about something already is only the tiniest part of it, that it's way bigger and way deeper and way more poetic, way more hard to grasp and pin down. It doesn't mean we should stay in the job. But what it does mean is that we haven't yet had the chance to sufficiently enter into the bigness and the vastness and the mystery and the depth of the something we're in the middle of. And that's what we're called to do as being humans. And I have no idea. I've got more of the book to read to find out whether he says any more about this man or whether he leaves his job or stays in his job. But I think that's barely the point, which is, I'm repeating myself here. When we treat ourselves and what we're experiencing as a problem to be excised or corrected, and we don't first slow down to pay attention and then find good, there's this place here where he says a steadfast imagination, that to come into a wondering and an inquiry about what we're in the middle of with imagination, maybe everything I've taken this to be so far is only one part, and there's another whole part of what this is that I haven't included yet. And maybe I'm trying very hard not to include what I haven't seen in it yet, because I'm really sure about my story about it. So imagination also allows us to go, maybe there's another way of seeing this. Maybe there's another way of talking about this. Maybe there's another way of understanding this. Maybe there's another way of making sense of this that I don't even know yet. And that's also part of the benefit of being in conversation. Like, you and I are doing that now with this, is not knowing together and standing in sort of an attitude of reverence towards it and curiosity towards it, and then new things begin to be born. Which is why I also feel the same way, which is I can't get any end of talking with people about the mysteries and depths and challenges of being in a human life, even if they sound the same every time, because they are and they're not.
I'm reminded, Justin, of one of the first times I ever saw you do coaching and the questions that you asked and what happened for the client that I was observing you working with, and the kind of magic that was happening for me as an observer, thinking, oh, well, I've never asked that question about what this thing is that I'm in. Or it's like something about being asked questions that you haven't asked yourself before about the thing, when they come from this place of curiosity from another person who isn't in your system, so they can see different things than you can see and have more openness and more neutrality and no skin in the game of the outcomes or whatever. And I remember thinking, oh gosh, I think your question was something like, so how come things are this way, or something like really straightforward, asking someone directly, how did it come to be like this? And I remember the client being like, oh, I haven't thought about that before. Because when we're in our little groove of the habitual way of thinking that we have, it's so difficult I think sometimes completely impossible to gain any kind of purchase on it. It's just a happening that's going on. And then you step in and you ask me a question I haven't asked myself before. And when you were speaking, Justin, I was getting in touch with this really deep longing in me for that to happen in my life, at the same time as going, that does happen in my life. But I can feel in the conversation that we're naming a really deep longing I have for the world to be this way, where we have this curiosity with one another. And when I saw you all those years ago with that client, something awakened in me of like, oh, we could all be asking different questions here that are non-obvious to us in our own little pool of pain, wherever we're in. And that immediately opens up a different world. So you have one conversation with someone, we ask some questions and deepen our relationship, and then we see each other a week later. And then we always ask, what's changed in between? Like, what's happened in between? Because a world of difference could be between this week and last week. Like, we just don't know. We can't assume that everything is the same. And it's reminding me of you talking about your lovely wife, Davina, and how you can wake up to her in the morning and think, I've got no idea who you are. And this is, after all these years, it's the depth of the mystery. That thing exists everywhere between us. We have no idea. We're unfathomable, mysterious, massive universes, each single one of us. And so these little simple questions that have a huge, big opening effect really matter to us, knowing ourselves even a little tiny bit more. And it's, I can feel the longing in me and the joy in me of like, yes, we can do that. We can ask a question that diverges from our normal way of asking ourselves questions about ourselves, and whole new worlds open. And these things that come along are the reasons we ask those questions. Weird circumstances, intractable problems, problems that persist and never go away, the ongoingness. It's like you wouldn't wish them on anyone if they're painful. And they have things that bring us closer to, I think Thomas More would call it, the soul. And if you attend the soul closely enough, he says, with an educated and steadfast imagination, what beauty gets born, gets revealed, what underlying gifts get shown. And this is the power of us being in this inquiry, like you said, the kind of ongoing, never-ending enthusiasm for people and their mysterious lives and us being in conversation with them. That's life-giving. And somebody said to me, Justin, the other day, well, I talk to other people and they just want to kind of fix me. And when I talk to you, you kind of seem to say really different things. What is that? And I said, well, I guess it's this thing, is that I don't think this is a problem. It's like a piece of life that's worthy of our attention. And let's be curious through all different ways of curiosity that we can be. And then let's see. And so that ongoing care also, I think, is appealing to a lot of people where they don't want to be fixed. They don't want to be changed. They just want to be in the conversation about it and wonder and try and find different ways of seeing. Because I think that's a dignifying feeling rather than a disasterizing feeling or I'm broken and this is terrible feeling. And then we can be creative about it.
I'm really moved by hearing you talk, Lizzie. And as we come to a close, I'm thinking about how even with listening to one another, even if I don't try to fix you or fix your problem, and we just fixed a technical problem with Riverside that we're using to record, Lizzie, before we started. And I think those kind of problems are really worth fixing. Like, we couldn't get the podcast out with us, but we know we're talking about something different here. There is a way of listening that is also an attempt to fix. So there's a way I might listen to you, which goes, quietly goes, come on, Lizzie, come on, come on, you've got the answer to this, come on. There's that listening. And I think a lot of time even when we're listening to other people, it's quite tempting, whether it's a friend or a partner or a child or a coaching client or a therapy client or whatever it is that people frame, or an employee or a colleague. Even when we get that we might need to give up, let me help you get rid of that thing, we can listen in a way which sort of presumes that my listening will help you find the answer and then everything will be fine. And that is a different kind of listening from the educated and steadfast imagination, curiosity, attention, and care. So what if when you're telling me about what you're in the midst of, I come at it with as much care, not just for you, but for the soul that you are, which is big enough and wide enough and complex enough and ancient enough to be filled. The very thing you're experiencing is almost certainly an aspect also of you, because it's an aspect of all of us. Can we first come in with care and attention? And like you said, sometimes just that already breathes space into something, and so it very naturally begins to turn into something different. But I think there's this place where I can't find it now, but Thomas says we don't really know what that's going to be, and that's also different from trying to fix. I think that the answer to the conflict you're in is for the other person to agree with you, or for you to get out of the situation, or for everything to get peaceful. But when we come at it with care and reverence, we find that something else wants to be born here. Mm-hmm. Sometimes nothing wants to be born. Sometimes all that is wanted is reverence and attention to this incredibly difficult, painful, and extraordinary meaning-laden situation. And sometimes something in it wants to unfold into something else. And it's our attitude of care, reverence, education, the imagination that allows us to do it. It's been wonderful, really lovely and wonderful and heart expanding for me to sit in this conversation with you for the last half an hour. And I know that, like every one of our sources, we could sit and do this for many hours and still more would come. And we have created a container around this for the sake of us and for the sake of all of you. Hello, all of you who are with us, who've come with us to the end of this conversation. But I suppose what I hope is that our doing this for half an hour opens doorways in all of us, that something might get to stir in our hearts from being in this conversation. And if you are one of our many people who listen and you want to share the source or this conversation or the podcast with someone else, That is really the only way people find out about this. And if you know that somebody else might benefit from being in the midst of this, please just find the link to the podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen, or on our website, send it to someone and invite them in, because they're so welcome. And even if you don't do that, because that's not for everyone, maybe just being in this conversation allows something to begin to ferment. That's a word that Thomas uses here, begins to ferment inside, which it certainly will with me. So thank you, Lizzie, for being here so with such imagination, educated imagination, every week, 455 weeks so far, nearly 9 years, and we plan on continuing. It is an enormous gift to do this with you, and thank you everyone who's with us. If you've come, stayed with us to the end of this conversation, thank you, thank you, thank you. We will, all being well, be back here in a week's time with something that Liz is going to bring.